Englandy. This is the moment the crowd have waited for. Just look at him go.
Congratulations, Catherine, on your wonderful performance in winning the gold medal in the 400 metre event of the Commonwealth Games.
Ian Thorpe really going for it. 3:40.17. This is absolutely amazing.
Tracy Wickham, a great world record here in Edmonton, and there it is, a world record.
The Diamonds Commonwealth drought has broken.
The hockey revolution has a golden uprising.
Adam Ayres, congratulations, and a games record. Adam Ayres has got a hat-trick of gold medals at the Commonwealth Games.
This is something to savour, something to remember for the rest of your life.
Get set, Australia. Welcome to Gold Coast Gold. Here's your host, Dave Colbert.
Hello and welcome to episode 16 of Gold Coast Gold. I'm David Colbert. It's just over 200 days to go to the Games, and with winter over for many of Australia's Commonwealth Games aspirants, it means returning to training after their European competitions. For others, it's business as usual, with the countdown continuing to key pre-games competitions and the all-important selection trials. This week, we'll introduce you to the incredible story of two-time world champion in jiu-jitsu and now wrestler Chantel Thompson, one of 17 children, a mother of three and world jiu-jitsu champion who is turning her attention to wrestling for the Commonwealth Games. But before we speak with Chantel, and as we count down with just 29 Fridays to go to the Gold Coast Games, let's take a look at the headlines from another big week in Commonwealth Games news. Olympic champion Catherine Skinner has been narrowly defeated by Jessica Rossi of Italy in the Shotgun World Championships in Moscow. In her first competition after taking a break after the Rio Games, Skinner finished fifth in the trap event at Glasgow and has her eyes set on Gold Coast Gold. Meanwhile, Tom Grice and Penny Smith are the inaugural world champions in the mixed team trap event. Australia had two teams competing for podium placings, and after Skinner and Jack Wallace were knocked out by the eventual bronze medalists, Grice and Smith went on to win the gold medal. Unfortunately, the mixed team event isn't on the program for the Gold Coast. In boxing, Australia's super heavyweight, big bad Joseph Goodall, won a bronze medal at the World Championships in Hamburg. The silver medalist from Glasgow lost his semi-final bout in a split-point decision. It was the first medal for Australia at the Men's World Championships since 1991. Plenty of cycling news this week, with 2017 Tour de France green jersey winner and 2015 road race silver medalist Michael Matthews announced as spearheading the Australian cycling team at the World Road Championships in Bergen, Norway later this month. The women's team is headlined by reigning national time trial and road race champion Katrin Garfoot, who will race in both the team in the time trial and the road races, having won a time trial bronze medal last year at the World Titles. Meanwhile, the World Mountain Bike Championships get underway in Cairns this weekend. Cross country is a discipline that will feature on the Gold Coast at the Commonwealth Games, and in Cairns, the leading male cross country athletes will be national elite champions Dan McConnell and Rebecca Henderson, both from the ACT. In netball, hope you're sitting down. New Zealand scored a shock surprise quad series win with a 57-47 win over the World Championship champions Australia in Invercargill. Coming off an upset loss to England 4 days earlier, the Kiwis dominated the game to win by 10 and secured their first series win since 2012. The Diamonds will next meet the Silver Ferns at the Constellation Cup beginning in Auckland in October. In weightlifting, the Commonwealth Weightlifting Championships are underway on the Gold Coast. 13 Australians join more than 400 weightlifters from throughout the Commonwealth who will compete in the week-long championships, which of course serve as a preview for next year's games on the Gold Coast. In triathlon, Gillian Backhouse scored a runaway victory in the World Cup event in the Czech Republic. Backhouse now heads to Rotterdam for the ITU World Triathlon Series Grand Final. The Western Australian Government has jumped in with support for our games team, with the state government presenting athletes with a cheque for $60,000 this week. WA athletes won 25 medals in Glasgow, 15 gold, 7 silver and 3 bronze. And finally, in athletics, Games organisers and Athletics Australia have confirmed the team of 177 local officials who will join the 29 international appointments at next year's Games. They may not be competing athletes, but we know that they're well worthy of a shout-out Congratulations to all our hard-working volunteers who will be just as much a part of the Games as the athletes next April. And that's this week's Commonwealth Games news. Time now for our feature interview on Gold Coast Gold, and we're joined by a fascinating athlete, Chantelle Thompson, who's a two-time world champion in jiu-jitsu and turning her attention to wrestling for the 2018 Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. But there's a lot more to her story than that. And welcome to you, Chantelle. Thanks for your time.
Hi, thanks for having me, and thanks to everyone listening.
Well, you've got a tremendous story, and it's difficult to know where to start, really. Do we talk about the fact that you're one of 17 children? Do we talk about your Indigenous background and growing up in regional Victoria? The fact that you're a mother of three, that your nickname, all of those things. We'll get to all of them, but let's start possibly at the end, and wrestling, and how you came to become a wrestler after winning two jiu-jitsu world titles.
I guess I'm always the kind of person that's always striving to push my own boundaries and to never rest on my laurels. So when I won my first world title in jiu-jitsu, I was actually already training wrestling to complement my jiu-jitsu. And for those that don't know, jiu-jitsu is a grappling-based sport that uses a kimono to fight in. So when I won my first world title, I looked around and I actually attended a female training camp at the AIS, and it was at this training camp that I found out that Australia's only ever qualified one female for the Olympics in the world's oldest sport and one of the core sports of the Olympics. And I was like, that's not a great number. And at that time, some of the athletes were identified as having transferable skills to potentially have some success in wrestling. And at that point, my initial thoughts were, no, I could never do something like that because I never grew up with organized sport and I never had aspirations to be an athlete. Actually, I was quite uncoordinated and very unathletic as a kid. And as you mentioned, growing up in rural, I actually grew up in rural New South Wales, a small town called Dareton, near on the border of Victoria. But being one of the second eldest of 17 kids, not that many at home, we didn't have much money and I had responsibilities to help out at home and other factors. So I thought, no, that's not really for me, but I'm always the kind of person that I don't like putting boundaries or barriers on myself. So when the opportunity to come out to try out for the 2016 Rio Olympics, I thought, you know what, at the end of 2015, I thought, I'm going to have a go at this. And I actually made it onto the national team. I made it onto the shadow team for the Olympics. And I got all the way to the African qualifiers where I copped an absolute flogging from an amazing, phenomenal athlete from Nigeria. But it was at that point that I thought, you know what? I actually want to have a go at this. So I set my sights on that to gun for 2018 Commonwealth Games.
And, of course, the 2020 Tokyo Olympics are in your sights as well. That talent ID search, was that part of the AIS's search around the country to find people from a whole range of different sports? Let's bring a group of people that think that they might have some skills, throw them in a room and see what they might be good at.
It would have been great if it was actually that, but it was actually the initiative of Kyla Bremner, Australia's only female Olympian in wrestling. And it was actually her idea to try and grow female participation in wrestling. And actually from that first camp, we had about 20 to 30 females that are based across different grappling disciplines, such as mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu, and some actual full-time freestyle wrestlers. And a few of us actually decided to take it up.
It's awesome. Let's go back to the beginning. Growing up in Dareton, as you mentioned, you're the eldest of 17 children, the only girl. What was that like growing up?
Well, I'm one of two girls. Okay. I've got a younger sister. It was, I mean, not all of us lived together. It was mum and dad together and then mum and dad separated. It was an interesting childhood at times, very challenging, but we're also a very close-knit family. And I guess my childhood experiences have defined my strength and my resilience and work ethic now. And growing up in a small town like you're close community. I was able to grow up on country, so I was always down the river and everything else like that. But I also, my father became a single parent at, when I was about 12 years old, so I took on big responsibilities at home to help out and look after my younger siblings. So, I mean, I grew up quite quickly, and but the house was always full of noise. You could never be lonely, and I grew up kind of bashing my younger brothers a little bit until they got bigger than me and I had to learn around. So I guess wrestling and fighting's always been in my blood.
And sport, was it a big part of the family's lifestyle growing up?
No. As I mentioned, we didn't have much financially. We were quite on the low socioeconomic side of things. So other than what was offered at school, I mean, I played a little bit of basketball, but I wasn't really that popular on the team because I was quite uncoordinated, no hand-eye coordination, and just very clumsy in my body awareness. So being physically active wasn't really a thing at home or within our family circle of playing sport.
And so how did you get into jiu-jitsu? Did it come, you know, later in life, or, you know, as an extension of the wrestling with the siblings?
So I, growing up in Dayton, it was being an Aboriginal female, but being a fair-skinned Aboriginal female, I never really fit in with the white kids, and I never really fit in with the black kids, and I was always in a lot of conflict, and it got to the point where I was being bullied quite severely, and it was either learn to stick up for myself or become a victim. And I learnt quite early on to start fighting back, and was often in quite serious confrontations as a youngster. So I became quite aggressive as I was growing up, and my auntie was concerned that I was going down the wrong track. So she introduced me to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and actually Kyokushin Karate. And I started mucking around a little bit, and that's actually where I met my now husband. So I kind of stuck around more for a boy than anything, but I never really took it seriously. It wasn't anything that kind of interested me until after the birth of my twins in 2009, where I actually developed severe postnatal depression. And after a suicide attempt, I finally admitted to myself and my partner and my sister that I was actually really sick. And it was from there that we decided that, because I didn't want to go down the path of medication because I didn't feel it was the right choice for me, I decided to start Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to see if that would help as a form of physical therapy.
And obviously it has. So your twins, Jada and Sone, and you've got another...
I've got an elder daughter, Nacinta
as well. So it's... How did you, that moment, you talked about the postnatal depression, and from what I've read, you were driving across an intersection and, you know, were contemplating what you might do in the car.
Yep.
From that moment to where you are now, what a journey. But it started with you recognising that this isn't right and I have to do something.
Yeah, I guess at that point, actually going before that, I was actually, and this is something that I've only really started talking about kind of this year, because it was quite raw and still quite confronting to even think about it in past times. But what actually the catalyst for that moment at the intersection was, actually I was breastfeeding and I was actually having visions of hurting the twins, and quite graphic images at the time. And I was at a point one night where my daughter just wouldn't sleep, and I'd been up for a very long time, and I became frustrated and overwhelmed, and I actually felt my arms tightening around Jada. And it was when her cry changed from one of discomfort to pain that, like, kind of shocked me out of what was happening at the time. And it was at that point that I actually went to the doctor's office, and there was an incident at the doctor's office where she saw on my file that I was Indigenous, and she wanted to call Child Protection to do a welfare check on my children. Now, with our history of the stolen generation and my own childhood history, that was actually a real fear of mine. So it was on the way home that I had these thoughts running through my head that if I'm a risk to my children, and now obviously someone else thinks I'm a serious risk, maybe I'm better off not being here. And I actually tried to drive through the intersection in front of the truck that was coming, but something stopped me, be it the universe, but I always believe that it's my mum and the spirit of my ancestors that kind of stopped me. And I mean, to look back now in hindsight, that when I first started this journey, I had no intentions of being good at jiu-jitsu or becoming a world champion. I mean, I literally started it to save my life and fell in love with it. And it was just one step at a time. And then just by that aspiration of mine to want to push my own boundaries and have a go and just see how far I can go, it's phenomenal to think about now.
It's amazing, and thankfully you are here with us and able to share what's an incredible story, and we thank you for doing so openly. When you're on the mat, is it one of those things where this is the place where you could forget about all of those things that you were going through and take yourself to another place and enjoy something that you were really good at?
I guess the more I reflect on it, I started fighting initially to learn how to fight, and because that was the only thing I knew, and I was always in survival mode. But I've kept fighting because I now no longer need to fight. It's a way of life. And I guess growing up a naturally aggressive kind of female and with a lot of negative energy to expend, people looked at me differently and treated me differently. And because I'm a bigger female as well, I always got made to feel ashamed or that I needed to hide my aggression and my strength. And rather than someone giving me a way to channel that energy and turning it into a positive, I was always made to feel like it was like I was an outcast or something to hide. But now stepping onto the mats, I know that I can go toe-to-toe with anyone. I guess that's the difference between jiu-jitsu and other sports, is that weight differences can be leveraged using leverage and angles and technique. But for me, stepping onto the mats is almost this permission to be myself without apology. And I don't have to apologize for being a strong, powerful female. I can own that. But now I can also control it. Like, I train with smaller males who might be 50, 60 kilos, and I know that I can't and I shouldn't use all of my strength and power on them, because the potential to injure someone is quite real. But then at the same time, when I'm up against my partner who's a 120-kilo Islander, I'm confident that I know how to work around him to potentially get a win. So it's like, it gives me permission to be myself without apology, and then that extends to who I am off the mat.
So your partner you talk about is George, who's also your training partner, and that must lead to some interesting interactions in the kitchen. Do you take your wrestling off the mat in that sense?
Not so much the wrestling, but the jiu-jitsu with the submissions and everything. We tend to get a little bit overexcited at home. But what's even funnier is that it's a real family affair now. So our children do it. And my daughters, as I mentioned, Jacinta's 10 and the twins are only 8. My son, who is a very gentle soul, and it takes a lot for him to lose his temper. He's got a slow burn, but my eldest daughter tends to dominate him quite a lot physically and enjoys doing so. And I've had to warn her that eventually, between his Islander heritage and my background, like we've got, besides the Indigenous heritage, we've also got Irish and kind of Anglo-Saxon heritage. So there's this ability to be naturally strong. And my brothers are all 6'4". So when she's bullying him, I have to remind her, eventually, like my brothers, he's going to get bigger than me, and one day she's going to cop a hiding back and she'll learn her place.
It's a good lesson. Just tell us about your work, your current work with the Indigenous youth, and particularly women.
So I was actually doing my studies. I was finishing off my teaching degree when we first moved to Melbourne. And I was asked by the school where I was doing my teaching placement to run a jiu-jitsu workshop. And it was at that time that the school was quite diverse in its cultures and religions and everything else. So George and I sat down, and coming from an Indigenous perspective, men and women, like, they had men's business and women's business. So we decided to do a program where the kids would start the program together. So we came together with the kids and we had a conversation around different things that had been identified by the school that they'd like the kids to be, that to know from our story, such as resilience and perseverance and the power of self-determination. And we did that. And then we separated the groups and we actually took the kids away. And I worked with the girls around some jiu-jitsu. I had girls in burkas and girls from different cultures doing takedowns and stuff that was completely outside of their comfort zone. And George did the same thing with the boys. But what kind of came out of the program was the relationship that I developed with some of the kids that were on the verge of being expelled. I was made friends with a group of three boys that were from the Middle East, and the principal was quite surprised at how open they were with me and the conversations we had. I mentored another young girl who her dad had built a gym at home. Because she was Muslim, she wasn't allowed to go to a normal gym, so she used to lift the weights at home. And it was then that it kind of planted the seed for the business that I have now, which is called Kilalana, which in Barkindji means growth. And through my own journey of overcoming my own trauma, my own barriers, and being refused to be defined by the circumstances or expectations and stereotypes of others, I began to want to help other people learn to help themselves and find their own inner strength. So I have started studying trauma and recovery in the hopes to one day become a trauma and recovery specialist, more towards understanding how trauma can impact people, but then working on the recovery side of things. So how can being physically active empower people to get out of their own heads and get back into their bodies and reconnect with themselves as they are? And then from that kind of thing, always starting a session with a physical session, we move into more self-development and identified areas of need within the groups that I'm working with. So I'm working with very diverse ranges. I'm working with, I'm actually working at the Malmesbury Youth Detention Centre with a group of boys, which that program still has the same kind of function. We do a physical session and then a self-development session, but where it leads is led by the boys. And then I've worked with an all-girls Aboriginal school around a talent ID kind of thing, where some of the girls have been identified as being future leaders. So we work around developing their skills and the importance of self-care as a female, and especially Indigenous females when we're usually caring a lot for others. But I've also done work in corporates and around community empowerment. So I'm really passionate around women and girls and youth at risk. And I just can't be more grateful for where jiu-jitsu and wrestling has taken me, but also by being a combat athlete and a female, what that can give me in terms of knowledge and experience and life lessons that I can then share with others.
Some of the boys might be a bit surprised when you're in a youth detention centre and you stroll in and they think they're pretty big and tough, but they meet somebody that they wouldn't be expecting. You must have some interesting interactions with them.
I think that the understanding is that I'm staunch enough that if these boys decide to do the wrong thing or they become triggered and they start to escalate in their behaviour, like I've had one or two try and test me and I've just been very firm with them. It's like, I'm not one of your normal workers. If you decide to try and do the wrong thing, I'm more than happy to defend myself and I have the skills. I'm not here because I'm just a normal person, male or female. I said, trust me, if you try and step the wrong way, I'm more than happy to defend myself and be assertive where needed. But I'm in there to be a bit of a, have tough love with the kids and be more nurturing, because a lot of these kids haven't had healthy relationships and interactions with others. They're all often judged for their behavior rather than being understood that the behavior is their way of communicating what their lived experiences had. These kids often come from backgrounds where there's low expectations, there's a lot of trauma, drug and alcohol abuse, like the list can go on. Where I come in is I just want to plant seeds of possibilities in these kids' heads and give them a few life skills and to try and get them to see themselves differently. Like a lot of these kids have amazing skill sets, but they just use them for the wrong things they've never been offered opportunities. Some people are more privileged than others, and I often quite like to say that not everyone starts at the same starting line. So for me, it's to come in and get these kids to see themselves differently and challenge them to want to be better, not for anyone else, but for themselves, and that They don't have to be defined by their circumstances or what's happened to them. I quite often quote Shakespeare to the kids because I love Shakespeare, and I get them, I read a bit of Shakespeare to them and we do a bit of storytelling, and I'm like, nothing is neither good nor bad. Thinking makes it so. So it's not necessarily what happens to them, because as children, as teenagers, you can't control what happens to you or what your starting point is in life. But with the right support in place, the right opportunities, you can define what that means to you. It's almost like repainting the pain and the adversity and finding the beauty and the challenge in it.
We're talking with Chantelle Thompson, who is a two-time jiu-jitsu world champion, but sights set on making the wrestling team for the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. You talk about, in your conversation with the young kids that you deal with, that there's someone who can provide that spark. For them, it's you that says, this is possible, you can change what you're doing now. Who was it for you? Was there one person that, for you, provided the spark to say, okay, you can set yourself on a different course?
I think it was definitely my grandmother, my father's mum, and my own mum. My mum had a very difficult childhood growing up, but she kind of, in her own way and as best as she could, she always told me that my circumstances weren't the easiest, but it was always up to me to do what I wanted, and that she saw something very special in me, and she always knew that I was destined for great things. So I guess she planted that seed of possibility in me, but it was always, because I was raised by my dad, it was always my grandma who was around to give me a kick up the backside. And my grandmother was a mechanic in World War II. And I mean, she defined the odds of and expectations of what was possible for females during her time. She raised five children while also helping her husband, my grandfather, run a block. But then she also went off and got her own job so she could have an income. And she always said to me, as long as you've got food on the table and a roof over your head and a little bit of money in your pocket, anything is possible. And it's not worth playing the victim. It's up to you what you get out of life. So I guess my mom and even my dad, to a certain extent, like, my dad did the best he could, but he always pushed me to try and be better and do more.
What? Let's turn our attention to the Gold Coast and wrestling competition. As you mentioned, we haven't had too many Australian wrestlers in the female competition at the elite level. What's the path, and what do you have to do to make the team?
It's definitely a lot different to jiu-jitsu, because jiu-jitsu is not in the Olympics or the Commonwealth Games yet. So having to, go through qualification processes was quite new to me. So we've already had one qualification process this year. We've had nationals, which you had to place in the top two, and I'm lucky enough to be on the shadow team, so I'm definitely in the running to get my spot. And the next qualification is in November, and if I win that, then I get put in the top two to be selected. And it's based on my past performance and my performance of this year, whether I get selected for the team or not. And it comes down to conditioning and your technique and your presentation on the day, and I guess a few other factors.
Can we have one in each weight category, or is it...
One female in each weight category, one competitor in each weight category, and there's six weight divisions, or five weight divisions, five for women and five for men. So if we qualify all of our spots, we'll have 10 wrestling athletes on the mat come 2018.
And where are you sitting at the moment in your category?
So I'm in the top two. I've got a nice, tough competitor. So we've faced off once already, and I got a silver, but I'm determined to get it back the next time we face off. So I've been working really, really hard, and it's kind of good to have that adversity and to know that you've got someone else out there who wants it just as much as you do, and it makes that battle and makes you work hard every single day and not to take anything for granted or to get complacent, but also that excitement, that potential for what's coming.
One of the reasons why we're doing this Gold Coast Gold series is to get behind the names and get to know our athletes across a whole range of sports. And Chantelle, we've got to know you a heck of a lot better today. And for many of the people that are listening, they might be aware of the name, they might have read some of the things, but we really do appreciate you sharing your story with us today. And fascinating story, incredible story, and your openness is very much appreciated. We thank you for your time. We wish you all the very best, and we'll be keeping an eye on those results when they come to November and the final trial for the team.
No worries, and I'd just like to say thank you to Goldoc and everyone who is supporting the Commonwealth Games and working towards making this an experience. I mean, being my first time going through this process, it's just absolutely phenomenal, the work that gets behind and the people that get behind events like this. And for it to be a home game, I mean, I'm beyond excited and humbled that I have the opportunity to just be in the process and to have opportunities like this. So thank you very much.
Good on you. We wish you all the best. Chantelle Thompson there, fascinating story. That's it for this edition of Gold Coast Gold. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an edition. You can join us at Commonwealth Games Australia on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the news regarding the Australian team at the 2018 Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. So until next week, thanks for your company on Gold Coast Gold.